Right now, we're joined by Ashley Campbell, Orange County Conservative, to talk about a whole bunch of different things. How are you?
Yeah, good. Thank you. How are you?
Doing all right. So, there are like a ton of things that are going on locally and nationally that we're going to talk about and we want to talk about and won't get to.
Exactly. Yeah.
Before we start, I know you wanted to talk about the Cooper's executive order on HB 142. I want to pick your brain on this first because this has just happened like in the last hour. But in addition
I probably don't know about it.
Yeah, probably not. But Jeff Flake isn't running for re-election to the U.S. Senate. You might have heard that. Yeah.
Just the headline.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. But same thing with Bob Corker, obviously. And there's like that wing of the Republican Party that's kind of getting squeezed out. Or squeezing themselves out or getting pushed out, one or the other. And I was wondering what your take is on that, because I maybe rightly or wrongly kind of associate you closer with that group of people that's leaving the Senate with...
I think that's fair. I think that's a fair assessment. I know, well, like I said, I just saw the headline about Jeff Flake, and that was sort of like a punch in the gut when I read it. It's just that was disappointing. And the reason that he's doing that is, like you said, he feels like the Republican Party doesn't have a place for him anymore because he's too libertarian to see himself fitting in with the future of the party, I guess. And he's been very vocally critical of Trump and like very few other people have been that are in Congress. And I wish, you know, that he would and a few others would stick with it and try to reform the party from within and encourage change that I would like to see in a more libertarian mode. But at the same time, I can understand it's like this machine that you're beating your head up against, and how do you even start?
It's going to be really interesting to watch, just because there have been these sort of realignment moments in American politics in the past where like a certain group of people that was just sort of an essential part of a party coalition get gradually pushed out. You had sort of the Southern Democrats in the like 30s who were just dyed-in-the-wool New Dealers, 100% on board with FDR's New Deal and everything that came after that, but also very pro-segregation. So when the Democratic Party made that turn in the 50s and 60s, they all got pushed out, and a lot of them gravitated elsewhere. But then it was a different generation, different group of people, and they weren't New Dealers anymore. So like the pro-New Dealer and anti-integration people from the 30s, they, I don't think, exist anymore in the same way. And it's probably the same thing with like Rockefeller Republicans in the 60s and 70s that were much more liberal Republicans, but still in that party, kind of got squeezed out gradually as the party made the Reagan turn in the 80s. And I don't know where they are anymore either. I'm not sure that they exist.
That's a good question, because it seems like even, you know, we've talked about polarization of, you know, just everyday folks on the show quite a bit. But it seems like even politicians are going that way too. Although maybe it's the media's portrayal of it that contributes to my perception of that happening.
It's probably a vicious cycle, right? Like the media contributes, and then politicians, and back and forth.
Right, because I mean, because like the Rockefeller Republicans made me think of John Kasich, and you know how he's more liberal Republican, and now he's, you know, saying, you know, he's not going to be in the Republican Party either, but for, you know, different reason than Jeff Flake.
Yeah. But like Lincoln Chafee before John Kasich, right?
Yes.
A few years ago, yeah.
Yeah.
And Jim Jeffords, like way back 15 years, yeah.
Exactly. And so, you know, it's, I wish there could be, I guess, more of a coalition, but, you know, maybe it's just not, it's not time for the Republican Party to be this umbrella party, you know. And I wish that there are more political parties for us to choose from, more viable parties at least. But you know, with this nature to compete that I think people have, and their innate sense to want to identify with one tribe or another. I think that's more often than not, and at least in our political system, how we end up with two parties. So
right.
It's definitely an uphill climb. But you know, the best I could hope for when I saw that headline again, it was just that, you know, maybe the whoever runs for the Republican Party for in Jeff Flake's place will be, you know, have similar leanings, libertarian leanings that he had. I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. It's disappointing.
It's yeah.
For
all
me.
Right. Speaking with Ashley Campbell, okay, let's turn to more local stuff. Last week, was it the executive order came down on?
I think
last week was a blur. I was filling in for Blake Hodges, news director, so I don't even know when things, I don't even know what day it is now, to be honest. But
yeah, I understand. I have a newborn, so I
oh,
get
God,
it.
Oh, God, yeah, I'm complaining to the wrong person.
No, not at all. Not at all, but I get it. Yeah, it was last week, Wednesday.
Yeah. Yes, I believe. So it's about a week ago. So, okay, so go back a year and a half. General Assembly passes HB2, which we all know what that is. God, when was it that that they passed the repeal and replace? The
February,
March, something like that?
It was March.
March just after the 1 year anniversary.
Thank you,
Blake Hodge. That's why we need Blake Hodge around more often. He's out
March
of town
of
and like
year.
Nothing is known. So March of this year, they pass HB 140. The General Assembly passes HB 142, which Cooper reluctantly signs. Is that what he did, if I remember right? They didn't pass it. They didn't override a veto on this, I think.
No, I don't think so. I guess he did. I hope that's right.
Because
I didn't go back and
look. It was the, like, basically repealing Part 3 of House Bill 2, but keeping Part 1 for the next 4 years, pretty much,
exactly.
The bathroom restrictions.
Exactly, until 2020.
So, yeah. So last week, Governor Cooper signs an executive order, which... what are the details of this? Allows trans people to use the bathroom of their choice in executive department buildings, basically, right?
Right, yeah. Exactly. And in public facilities that are under the purview of the executive branch.
Right.
But I mean, this is pretty wide reaching. It includes, you know, even state historic sites, state museums, things like that. And then it also relates to employment
contractors.
Practices.
Right.
Yes. And, you know, the hiring of state contractors. State contractors would have to not discriminate based on gender identification. And it even extends to services like the DMV, for example. Now, I don't know if that necessarily means that they're going to, I guess it would, you know, if you're getting your license, your gender identification would be what is printed on your license, not your biological sex. But actually, I don't know that detail. But it does extend to state services like
that as well. Not UNC, not public schools.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. No, nothing to do with education, as far as I know.
So this was announced on Wednesday, like late afternoon, and it kind of, I mean, there was a little bit of a reaction to it on Thursday, and then it kind of went away, and now the latest on this is Republicans in the General Assembly spoke out against it at first, and now they're asking the, because this was all part of a court settlement to dismiss a lawsuit. They're asking the court to dismiss the lawsuit and then refuse to accept the settlement is basically what they're asking now.
Right. So that's why it gets a little bit confusing when you're first reading about this, because there's this this settlement that Governor Cooper and the Attorney General are offering. If the loss, they're willing to drop the lawsuit against HB2 and I guess 142.
If
a federal judge will sign off on the order that they submitted last week.
And the judge is Thomas Schroeder, I think, who's in Greensboro.
I think that's right. Yeah. Yes. The federal court. And then they announce at the same time this executive order about employment. discrimination.
Right, right. Because those were technically separate things.
They were.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. But it's easy to lump it all together.
Yeah.
So we're still waiting on the signature from the federal judge. Then nothing has happened with that yet.
Right,
but the executive
right.
order has already
The executive
happened.
Order is through. And how removed is that from the executive order that Governor McCrory issued last year? Because he issued an executive order shortly after HB 2 passed, sort of mitigating the effects of that with regard to the executive branch. It was a non-discrimination order within the executive department. So any department or any agency that was directly under his control, he issued that executive order, and it was pretty much the same response, like, oh, that's all well and good, but it's not nearly good enough from the left versus why are you doing this from the right? And you kind of get the same response to Cooper's executive order, too, a little bit.
Oh, no, that's a good question. I didn't see a comparison of Cooper's executive order to McCrory, so to be honest, I would have to review that.
Cooper's is a little bit more wide-reaching because I think it deals with contractors specifically, whereas
right.
McCrory's was just the executive, like the executive branch buildings, but
that could be the biggest difference,
yeah.
Simply because from what I've read, there's been a little more disagreement with the executive order from Cooper because of the effect that it will have on private businesses. Essentially, it's the contractors hired by the state. So it's not just government facilities. It's
right,
also
right.
with these contractors.
Okay, take on that?
Well, I mean, I just, overall, to answer this big question, I just don't think that bathroom use should be a question that is dealt with by government, you know, whether it's politicians, elected officials, or bureaucrats, or lawyers, judges, no one really should have a say in our bathroom use. So, because as always, is the problem, in my opinion, with government decisions, and they're trying to find one solution to fit everything, and that doesn't work. And so the best answer that I can see is to decentralize that decision making, and you know, as far as that affects businesses, to allow businesses to or any private entity to have whatever kind of restroom facility that they want. Now, whereas with government, where theoretically everybody has a right to government facilities, including bathrooms, then that would come down to, you know, what the constituency, the citizens under that government, whether it's, you know, state, federal, or local, whatever, what they would decide. So that being the case, then I feel like with government facilities, it's best left to localities rather the closer to home the
okay.
better.
Let me ask you this, because the portion of the executive order with regard to government contractors, just because of the limitations of the executive order and what the governor in general is capable of doing in an executive order, at no point does it say a business cannot have such and such a policy. It's saying if a business has such and such a policy, then no government contracts. Is that
right?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it's if it's worded that way, if it's it's, you know, walking a fine line
yeah.
there, because it really does put pressure on any business to conform with that, just so they can get the contract with the government. But you know, that's ultimately up to the constituents to, you know, put pressure in turn on their government if they disagree with that,
yeah.
to reverse that policy. But you know, in effect, it is telling businesses that you have to have this policy that aligns with what we want, and otherwise we won't have a chance in the contract awarding process.
I want to be in the same room with the business owner who's like, man, I really want this government contract, but I also really want to be able to fire gay people.
Right. No, I mean, because it is like, I mean, I was talking about bathroom use, but of course it is a lot bigger than that. It's, you know, employment practices.
And two separate issues, right?
It is two separate. That's, you know, my mind went to that probably because that's all anybody seems like they want to talk about outside of this room, I guess. But, you know, yeah, I think that the right to discriminate, you know, for businesses, I would stick by that, because I think that private entities should be able to hire whoever they want to hire. Just like I think that they should be, you know, as I've said before, if they wanted to hire only transgender individuals, I don't think that.
Does that extend to every category, though? Like, how far does that go?
I don't see a reason why.
Because we had that conversation like a year ago, and it was like, well,
when HB2 is happening.
You can go full freedom of association and say, you'd have to scrap the Civil Rights Act, basically, to throw open the playing field for all of that. Or if you're not willing to do that, then if you're not allowed to discriminate on the basis of race or religion or any of these other categories, there's no reason logically not to include these. But I don't think I don't think there's a logical position in the middle, which is a thing that I don't want to say. But
I don't think so either. I think, well, I'm kind of an all or nothing person anyway. but I think I would be when it comes to this as well. I can't see a reason why I would say, you know, a business couldn't discriminate, you know, based on whatever kind of criteria that they wish. I mean, it's up to consumers if it's a business selling a service or a good, it would be then up to consumers who disagree with that practice not to purchase that and punish them by withholding their money. Or if it's, you know, something like employment, well, then of course, you know, you wouldn't, it would be, something like social pressure could be put on them either through the action of individuals, working separately or working together, to bring attention to, this kind of practice. I think that it can just be solved. A tolerant society can be had without legislating employment practices.
We gotta wrap
up. Believe that.
Yeah. I hope you're right. Ashley Campbell, thank you so much.
Thank you, Aaron.